I was feeling really crappy, but I didn't want to broadcast it. I didn't want to overnight in the hospital. They take your clothes away and hide them and make you sleep in one of those cotton gowns that your ass hangs out of. Jeez, I said. What was I shot with? An elephant gun? Morelli had the dart in a plastic evidence bag in his pocket. He held the bag out for me to see.
Looks to me to be more large dog size.
Oh, great. I was shot with a dog dart. That doesn't even make good bar conversation.
Morelli eased me into his truck.
We'll leave your car here. I don't think we want to put you behind the wheel yet.
I wasn't going to argue. I was developing a monster headache.
There was a single red rose on the dash. A square white card in a plastic evidence bag had been placed beside the rose. Morelli gestured at the rose.
That was left on your windshield.
He reached across and took the card and turned it so I could read the message. You should be more careful. If you make it too easy, the fun will be gone.
This is creepy, I said. This is definitely psycho.
It started right after you became involved with Singh, Morelli said.
Do you think it's Bart Cohn?
He'd be on the list, but I'm not convinced he's the one. I can't see him leaving roses. Bart Cohn doesn't strike me as a man who has a flair for the dramatic.
I wanted it to be Bart Cohn. He was an easy mark. I had a fantasy scenario going in my head. Stephanie and Lula break into Bart's home, find the tranquilizer gun stashed beside the gun that killed Howie, and call the police. The police immediately arrest Bart, and Stephanie lives happily ever after. Needless to say, the fantasy scenario didn't include Stephanie doing time for illegal entry.
This has moved way beyond my comfort zone, I said to Morelli. If I wasn't shot full of tranquilizer, you'd be seeing some first-rate hysteria.
Morelli turned left out of the lot.
What were you doing here, anyway?
I was returning to my apartment because you liked looking at Gilman in her thong.
Shit, Morelli said. You're such a girl.
I closed my eyes and rested my head on the seat back. You're lucky I'm drugged.
Did you notice anything unusual when you parked? A strange car? A paranoid schizophrenic lurking in the shadows?
Nothing. I wasn't looking. I was making the most of my indignation.
By the time we reached Morelli's house, the sun was low in the sky, and the night insects were singing. I looked down the street, more from comfort than fear. Hard to believe anything bad could happen on Morelli's street. Mrs. Brodsky was sitting on her porch, and Aunt Rose's second-story curtains, filmy behind the glass, floated like a protective charm. Morelli's neighborhood felt benign. Of course, none of that stopped Morelli from doing his cop thing. He'd been checking his tail all the way over, making sure we weren't followed. He parked and helped me out of the truck, hustling me into the house, partially shielding me with his body.
I appreciate the effort, I said, sinking onto his couch. But I hate when you put yourself in danger to protect me.
Bob climbed up next to me, leaving no room for Morelli. Bob had a piece of dog biscuit stuck to his head.
How does he always get food stuck to him? I asked Morelli.
I don't know, Morelli said. It's a Bob mystery. I think stuff falls out of his mouth and he rolls in it, but I'm not sure.
About Gilman, I said.
I can't talk about Gilman. It's police business.
This isn't one of those James Bond things where you sleep with Gilman to get information out of her, is it?
Morelli slouched into a chair and clicked the television on.
No, this is one of those Trenton cop things where we threaten and bribe Gilman to get information out of her.
He found a ball game, adjusted the sound, and turned to me.
So, are you sleeping with me tonight?
Yes, but I have a headache.
I closed my eyes and tried to relax.
Oh my gosh, I said, my eyes popping open. I forgot to tell you. I have an email from Howie's killer, and it links the killing and the flowers.
Morelli was long gone by the time I dragged myself out of bed. I shuffled into the bathroom, took a shower, dressed in jeans and t-shirt, and found my way to the kitchen. I got coffee brewing and put a couple slices of bread in the toaster while I drank my orange juice and checked my email. I suspected there would be a message from the killer. I wasn't disappointed. Now the hunter is the hunted, the email read. How does it feel? Does it excite you? Are you prepared to die? Bob was sitting beside me, waiting for breadcrumbs to fall out of my mouth. I'm not excited, I told Bob. I'm scared. The words echoed in the kitchen and made my breath catch in my chest. I didn't like the way the words sounded and decided not to say them out loud again. I decided to give denial another chance. Some thoughts are best kept silent. That's not to say I was going to ignore being scared. I was going to try very, very hard to be very, very careful. I signed off and called Morelli and told him about the latest email. Then I called Lula and asked her to pick me up. I wanted to go back to Tribro, and my car was still parked in my apartment building lot. I needed a ride, and I needed a partner. I wasn't going to stay inside, hiding in a closet, but in all honesty, I didn't want to go out alone. 10 minutes later, Lula rolled to a stop in front of Morelli's house. Lula drove a big old red Firebird that had a sound system that could shake the fillings loose in your teeth. The front door to Joe's house was closed and locked, and I was in the kitchen in the back of the house, and I knew Lula had arrived because Shady's bass was giving me heart arrhythmia.
"You don't look so good," Lula said when I got into the car. "You got big bags under your eyes, and your eyes are all bloodshot. You must have really had a good time last night to look this bad this morning."
I was shot with a tranquilizer dart last night, and I had a killer hangover from it until about 4 this morning.
Get out! What were you doing getting shot with a tranquilizer dart?
I wasn't doing anything. I was walking from my car to my apartment building, and someone shot me in the back.
Get out! Did you find out who did it?
No, the police are investigating.
I bet it was Joyce Barnhart. Joyce would do something like that, trying to even the score for all the times we zapped her with the stun gun and you let Bob poop on her front lawn.
Joyce Barnhart? I'd forgotten about Joyce Barnhart. She'd be a prime contender, too, except for the Howie shooting. Joyce wasn't a killer. I went to school with Joyce, and she'd made my life a misery. Joyce publicized secrets. When she didn't have a secret, she fabricated stories and started rumors. I wasn't the only one singled out, but I was a favorite target. A while back, Vinny hired Joyce to do some apprehension work, and once again, Joyce and I crossed paths. I don't think it's Joyce, I told Lula. I think the Trank incident is related to the Howie shooting.
Get out!
If Lula said, get out, one more time, I was going to choke her until her tongue turned blue and fell out of her head. And you're probably in danger when you hang with me, I told Lula. I'd understand if you wanted to bail.
Are you shitting me? Danger's my middle name.
Chapter 7. We were out of Joe's neighborhood and moving across town. Lula had M&M cranked up. He was rapping about trailer park girls and how they go round the outside, and I was wondering what the heck that meant. I'm a white girl from Trenton. I don't know these things. I need a rap cheat sheet. I was checking the rearview mirror now. I didn't want a second dart between the shoulder blades. It was time to be vigilant. I had no indication that the creep who was stalking me knew I was living with Joe, and I was riding in Lula's car, so maybe today would be uneventful. We hit Route 1, and I noticed there was a cooler on the back seat. Are you still on the diet? I asked. Is the cooler filled with vegetables?
Hell no. That was a bogus diet. You could waste away and die on that diet. I'm on a new diet. This here's the all-protein diet that I'm on. I'm going to be a supermodel in no time on this diet. All I have to do is stay away from the carbs. Carbohydrates are the enemy. I can eat all the meat and eggs and cheese I want, but I can't eat any bread or starch or any of that shit. Like, I can have a burger, but I can't eat the roll. And I can only eat the cheese and grease on the pizza. Can't eat the crust.
How about donuts?
Donuts are gonna be a problem. Don't think there's anything I can eat on a donut.
So, what's in the cooler?
Meat. I got ribs and rotisserie chicken and a pound of crispy bacon. I can eat meat until I grow a tail and moo. This is the best diet. I can eat things on this diet that I haven't been able to eat in years.
Like what?
Like bacon.
You always eat bacon.
Yeah, but I feel guilty. It's the guilt that puts the weight on.
Lula turned into the industrial park and wound around some until she came to Tribro.
Now what? She asked. You want me to go in with you, or you want me to stay here and guard the chicken?
Guard the chicken?
Okay, so I'm going to eat the chicken. That's the good part of this diet. You eat all the time. You could shove pork roast and leg of lamb down your throat all day long, and it's okay, long as you don't have biscuits with it. I had a steak for breakfast, a whole steak, and then I had a couple eggs. Is that a diet or what?
Sounds a little screwy.
That's what I thought at first, but I bought a book that explains it all, and now I can see where it makes sense.
Keep your eyes open while you're guarding the chicken. I shouldn't be more than a half hour. Call me on my cell if you see anyone suspicious in the lot.
You mean like someone setting up a dart gun?
Yeah, that would be worth a phone call. I'd gotten in touch with Andrew first thing this morning before leaving the house. I told him I needed some information, and he said he'd be happy to help. Andrew, the people person. Hopefully I could get to him without crossing paths with Bart. I hated to admit it, but I was afraid of Bart. I did a brisk walk across the lot to the building entrance and hurried through the large glass door. The woman at the desk smiled and waved me through to Andrew's office. I thanked her on a whoosh of expelled air. I'd just had two bad parking lot experiences, and many of my body functions, like breathing, now stopped when I set foot on parking lot pavement. Andrew stood and smiled when I entered his office.
He didn't say much on the phone. How's the Sing search going?
We're making progress. I'm looking for a woman named Susan. I was hoping you could check through your employee list and pull out the Susans.
Susan is a pretty common name. What's the connection to Sing?
It's vague. She's just a name that turned up, and I thought I should check it through. Andrew turned to his computer, typed in a series of commands, and the screen filled with the employee database. Then it executed a search for all Susans.
We employ 8 Susans, he finally said. When I set the age at 40 or below, I'm left with 5 Susans. I'll give you a printout and you can talk to them if you want. All are married. None work in Sing's department, but he would have had a chance to mingle with the general population during breaks and at lunch. We're a relatively small company. Everyone knows everyone else.
Clyde appeared in the open doorway. He was wearing a faded Star Trek t-shirt and new black jeans that were pooled around his ankles. Scruffy sneakers peeked out from under the jeans. He had a can of Dr. Pepper in one hand and a bag of cheese doodles in the other. He had a Betty Boop tattoo on his chunky left arm.
"Hey, Stephanie Plum," Clyde said. "I was taking a break and I heard you were here. What's up? Anything exciting going on? Did you find Samuel Sing?"
"I haven't found Sing, but I'm working on it." My eyes strayed to Betty Boop. Clyde grinned and looked down at Betty.
"It's a fake. I got it last night. I'm too chicken to get a real one."
"Stephanie has a list of people she'd like to talk to," Andrew said. "Do you have time to take her around?"
"You bet. Sure I do. Is this part of the investigation? How do you want me to act? Should I be casual?"
"Yeah," I said. "You should be casual." Clyde reminded me a lot of Bob, with the unruly hair and goofy enthusiasm.
"These are all Susans," Clyde said, looking at the list. "That's a lead, right? Some woman named Susan knows where Sing is hiding. Or maybe some woman named Susan bumped Sing off. Am I close? Am I getting warm?"
"It's nothing that dramatic," I told Clyde. "It was just a name that popped up as a possible friend."
"I know all these women," Clyde said, leading me out of Andrew's office. "I can tell you all about them. The first Susan is real nice. She has 2 kids and a beagle, and the beagle's always at the vet. I think her whole paycheck goes to the vet. The dog eats everything. One time, he was real sick, and they x-rayed him and found out he had a stomach full of loose change. Her husband works here, too. He's in shipping. They live in Ewing. They just bought a house there. I haven't seen the house, but I think it's one of those little tract houses."
Clyde was right about the first Susan. She was very nice. But she only knew Sing from a distance. And the same was true for the other 4 Susans. And I believed them all. None of the Susans seemed like girlfriend material. None of them looked like sharpshooters or killers. They all looked like they might send roses and carnations.
"Those are all the Susans," Clyde said. "None of them worked out, huh? Do you have any other leads? Any clues we could work on next?"
"Nope, that's it for now."
"How about lunch?"
"Gee, sorry, I have a friend waiting for me in the parking lot."
"Thank God."
"I'm a pretty interesting guy, you know," he said. "I have a lot going on."
His eyes got round.
"You haven't seen my office yet. You have to see my office."
I glanced at my watch.
"It's getting late." "My office is right here."
He galloped down the hall and opened the door to his office.
"Look at this."
I followed him and stepped into his office. One wall was floor-to-ceiling shelves, and the shelves were filled with action figures. Star Trek, professional wrestlers, G.I. Joe characters, Star Wars, Spawn, about 200 Simpsons figures.
"Is this an awesome collection or what?" he asked.
"It's fun.
And I collect comic books, too. Mostly action comics. I have a whole stack of original Spider-Man McFarlanes. Man, I wish I could draw like him."
I looked around the room. Large old wooden partner's desk with desk chair. Computer with oversized LCD monitor. Trash basket filled with squashed Dr. Pepper cans. Framed poster of Barbarella behind the desk. Single chair in front of the desk. Dog-eared comics piled high on the chair seat. None of the catalogs and product samples I saw in Bart's office.
"So," I said, "what's your part in the business?"
Clyde giggled.
"I don't have one. Nobody trusts me to do anything. Now, on the surface, that might seem a little insulting, but if you examine it more closely, you see that I have a good deal. I collect a paycheck for staying out of the way. How good is that?"
"Does it get boring? Do you have to sit here all day?"
"Yeah, I guess sometimes it's a little boring. But everyone's nice to me, and I get to do all the things I like. I can play with my action figures and read comics and play games on the computer. It isn't like I'm mentally retarded, it's just that I screw up a lot. The truth is, I'm not real interested in making thingamabobs."
"What would you like to do?" He shrugged.
"I don't know. I guess I'd like to be Spider-Man."
Too bad Clyde wasn't older. He'd be perfect for Grandma Mazur. Lula was sound asleep with the driver's seat tipped back when I returned to the car. I jumped in and locked my door and nudged Lula.
"Hey," I said, "you're supposed to be on lookout."
Lula sat up and stretched.
"There wasn't anything to see, and I got sleepy after eating all that chicken. I ate the whole thing. I even ate the skin. I love skin. And you know how all other diets tell you not to eat the skin? Well, guess what? I'm doing the skin diet now, girlfriend."
"That's great. Let's get out of here."
"Something happened in there to make you in such a rush to take off?"
"Just feeling antsy."
"Fine by me. Where are we going next?"
I didn't know. I was out of leads, out of ideas, out of courage. "Let's go back to the office." Lula and I saw the black truck simultaneously. It was parked in front of Vinny's office. It was a new Dodge Ram. It didn't have a speck of dust on it. It had bug lights on the cab, oversized tires, and a license plate that was probably made in someone's basement. Ranger drove a variety of cars. All of them were black. All were new. All were expensive. And all were of dubious origin. The Ram was his favorite.
"Be still my beaten heart," Lula said. "Does my hair look okay? Am I starting to drool?"
I wasn't nearly so excited. I suspected he was waiting for me, and I worried that it wasn't going to be a good conversation. I followed Lula into the office. Connie was at her desk, head down, furiously shuffling papers. Vinny's door was closed. Ranger was slouched in a chair, elbows on the arms, fingers steepled in front of him, his eyes dark and intense, watching us. I smiled at Ranger.
"Yo," I said.
He smiled back, but he didn't yo. "We're just checking in," I said to Connie, leaning on the front of her desk. "Do you have anything for me?"
"I have skips piling up on my desk," Connie said, "but Vinny doesn't want anyone even looking at them until Singh is found."
"No calls? No messages?" Ranger unfolded himself and crossed the room, standing close behind me, sucking me into his force field.
We need to talk.
A flash of heat rippled through my stomach. Ranger always evoked a mixture of emotion. Usually that mixture was attraction, followed by a mental eye roll.
Sure, I said.
Now, outside.
Lula scurried behind the file cabinets, and Connie bent into the nonsense paper shuffling. No one wanted to get caught in the line of fire when Ranger was in a mood. I followed Ranger out the door to the sidewalk and stood blinking in the sun.
Get into the truck, Ranger said. I feel like driving.
I don't think so.
The line of his mouth tightened.
Where are we going? I asked.
Does you want a full itinerary?
I don't want to get locked up in a safe house.
I'd love to lock you up in a safe house, babe, but that wasn't my plan for the day.
Promise? Cross your heart and hope to die?
There was a slight narrowing of his eyes. Ranger wasn't feeling playful.
I guess you have to decide if it's more dangerous to be in the truck with me or to stand out here as a potential target for the sniper.
I stared at Ranger for a beat.
Well?
He asked.
I'm thinking.
Christ, Ranger said. Get in the damn truck.
I climbed into the truck, and Ranger drove two blocks down Hamilton and turned into the burg. He wound through the burg and parked on Roebling in front of Marsilio's restaurant.
I thought you wanted to drive, I said.
That was the original plan, but you smell like rotisserie chicken, and it's making me hungry.
It's from Lula. She's on this diet where she eats meat all day.
Bobby V met us at the door and gave us a table in the back room. The burg is famous for its restaurants. They're stuck all over the place in the neighborhood, between houses, next to Betty's bridal shop and Rosalie's beauty parlor. Most are small. All are family affairs. And the food is always great. I'm not sure where Bobby V fits in the scheme of things at Marsilio's, but he's always on hand to direct traffic and schmooze. He's a snappy dresser. He's got a handful of rings and a full head of wavy silver hair, and he looks like he wouldn't have much trouble breaking someone's nose. If you're in bad with Bobby V, don't even bother showing up, because you won't get a table. Ranger sat back in his chair, took a moment to scan the menu, and ordered. I didn't need the menu. I always got the fettuccine Alfredo with sausage. And then, because I didn't want to die, I got some red wine to help unclog my arteries.
Okay, Ranger said when we were alone. Talk to me.
I filled him in on the shooting, the dart, the email.
And what really has me freaked is that Joe's grandma saw me dead in one of her visions, I said, an involuntary shiver ripping through me.
Ranger was motionless, face impassive.
Every lead I get ends up in the toilet, I told him.
Well, you must be doing something right. Someone wants to kill you. That's always a good sign.
I guess that was one way of looking at it. Problem is, I'm not ready to die.
Ranger looked at the food in front of me. Noodles and sausage in cheese and cream sauce.
Babe, he said.
Ranger's plate held a chicken breast and grilled vegetables. He was hot, but he didn't know much about eating.
Where are you now?
Ranger wanted to know.
Did you have any more leads to follow?
No leads. I'm out of ideas.
Any gut instincts?
I don't think Singh's dead. I think he's hiding. And I think the freak who's stalking me is directly or indirectly associated with Tribro.
If you had to take a guess, could you pull a name out of a hat?
Bart Cohn is the obvious.
Ranger made a phone call and asked for the file on Bart Cohn. In my mind, I imagined the call going into the nerve center of the Bat Cave. No one knows the source of Ranger's cars, clients, or cash. He operates a number of businesses which are security-related, and he employs a bunch of men who have skills not normally found outside a prison population. His right-hand man is named Tank, and the name says it all. Tank walked into the restaurant 20 minutes later with a manila envelope. He smiled and nodded a hello to me. He helped himself to a slice of Italian bread, and he left. Ranger and I read through the material, finding few surprises. Bart was divorced and living alone in a townhouse north of the city. He had no recorded debts. He paid his credit cards and his mortgage on time. He drove a 2-year-old black BMW sedan. The packet included several newspaper clippings on the murder trial and a profile on the murdered woman. Lillian Parisi was 26 years old at the time of her death. She had brown hair and blue eyes, and from the photo in the paper, she looked to be of average build. She was pretty in a girl-next-door way, with curly shoulder-length hair and a nice smile. She was unmarried, living alone in an apartment on Market, just 2 blocks from the Bluebird Luncheonette, where she'd worked as a waitress. In a very general sort of way, I suppose she resembled me. Not a good thought to have when investigating an unsolved murder that had serial killer potential. But then, half the women in the burg fit that same description, so probably there was no reason for me to be alarmed. Ranger reached over and tucked a brown curl behind my ear.
"She looks a little like you, babe," Ranger said. "You want to be careful."
"Super." Ranger looked at my pasta dish. I'd eaten everything but one noodle. A smile twitched at the corner of his mouth. "I don't want to get fat," I told him.
"And that noodle would do it?"
I narrowed my eyes. "What's your point?"
"Do you have room for dessert?"
I sighed. I always had room for dessert.
"You're going to have dessert at the Bluebird Luncheonette," Ranger said. "I bet they have good pie. And while you're eating the pie, you can talk to the waitress. Maybe she knew Parisi."
Halfway across town, I rechecked the reflection in my side mirror for the 4th time. "I'm pretty sure we're being followed by a black SUV," I said.
"Tank."
"Tank's following us?"
"Tank's following you."
Ordinarily, I'd be annoyed at the invasion of privacy. But right now, I was thinking privacy was overrated, and it wasn't a bad idea to have a bodyguard. The Bluebird sat cheek to jowl with several small businesses on 2nd Avenue. This wasn't the most prosperous part of town, but it wasn't the worst either. Most of the businesses were family-owned and operated. The yellow brick storefronts were free of graffiti and bullet holes. Rents were reasonable and encouraged low-profit businesses. A shoe repair shop, a small hardware store, a vintage clothing store, a used bookstore, and the Bluebird Luncheonette. The Bluebird was approximately the size of a double-wide railroad car. There was a short counter with 8 stools, a pastry display case, and cash register. Booths stretched along the far wall. The linoleum was black and white checkerboard, and the walls were Bluebird blue. We took a booth and looked at the menu. There was the usual fare of burgers and tuna melts and pie. I ordered lemon meringue, and Ranger ordered coffee, black. "Excuse me," I said, palms down on the formica tabletop. "Coffee? I thought we came here for pie."
"I don't eat the kind of pie they serve here."
I felt a flash of heat go through my stomach. I knew firsthand the kind of pie Ranger liked. The waitress stood with pencil poised over her pad. She was late 50s with bleached blonde hair piled high on her head, heavily mascaraed eyes, perfectly arched crayoned-on eyebrows, and iridescent white lipstick. She had big boobs barely contained in a white t-shirt. Her hips were slim in a black spandex miniskirt, and she was wearing black orthopedic shoes.
"Honey, we got all kinds of pie," she said to Ranger.
Ranger cut his eyes to her, and she took a step backward.
"But then, maybe not," she said.
"I'm not usually in this neighborhood," I told the waitress, "but my little sister knew a girl who used to work here, and she always said the food was real good. Maybe you knew my sister's friend, Lillian Parisi?"
"Oh, honey, I sure did. She was a sweetheart. Didn't have an enemy. Everyone loved Lillian. That was a terrible thing that happened to her. She was killed on her day off. I couldn't believe it when I heard. And they never caught the guy who did it. They had a suspect for a while, but it didn't turn out. I tell you, if I knew who killed Lillian, he'd never come to trial."
"Actually, I lied about my sister," I said. We're investigating Lillian's murder. There have been some new developments.
I figured, the waitress said. You get to be a good judge of people with a job like this. And Rambo's got Fed written all over him. A local cop would have ordered pie.
Ranger looked at me and winked, and I almost fell off my seat. It was the first time he'd ever winked at me. Somehow Ranger and winking didn't go together. Did Lillian have a boyfriend? I asked.
Nothing serious. She was going out with this one guy, but they broke up. She hadn't seen him for a couple months. His name was Bailey Scruggs. You don't forget a name like Bailey Scruggs. The cops talked to him early on. So far as I know, she wasn't dating anyone when she was killed. She was real depressed after breaking up with Scruggs, and she spent a lot of time on a computer, chat rooms and stuff. Do you want to know what I think? I think it was one of them random killings. Some nut saw her out walking in the woods. The world's full of nuts.
I know this all happened a while ago, I said, but try to think back. Was Lillian ever worried, scared, upset? Anything unusual happened to her? Like, was she ever shot with a tranquilizer dart?
The police asked me all those same questions. At the time, I couldn't think of anything to tell them. But there was something that popped into my head months later. I couldn't decide if I should go tell someone. It was sort of an odd thing, and all that time had passed, so I ended up keeping it to myself.
What was it? I asked.
This is probably stupid. But a couple days before she was killed, someone left a red rose and a white carnation on her car, stuck them under the windshield wiper with a card. And the card said, "Have a nice day."
Lillian was kind of upset about it.
She brought them in here and threw them away. I guess that's why it bothered me when I remembered. She didn't say anything more about them, like who they were from or anything.
Do you think the flowers might have been important?
Hard to say,
Ranger told her.
You should talk to her neighbor, the waitress said to us. Carl. I don't remember his last name. They were real good friends. Nothing romantic, just good friends.
I ate my pie and Ranger drank his coffee. Neither of us said anything until we were out of the cafe and into his truck.
Shit, I said. Shit, 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 shit.
I have a house in Maine, Ranger said. It's nice there at this time of year.
It was a tempting offer. Is there an outlet mall nearby? Is it close to a cheesecake factory? A Chili's?
Babe, it's a safe house. It's on a lake in the woods.
Oh boy, bears, black flies, rabid raccoons, and spiders. Thanks for the offer, but I think I'll pass. Just tell Tank to stick close to me. Ranger put the truck in gear, turned at the corner, drove two blocks down Market, and parked in front of an old Victorian clapboard house. The front door was unlocked and led to a small foyer. There were six mailboxes lined up on the wall. Beyond the mailboxes, a hand-carved mahogany railing followed a broad staircase to the second and third floors. The carpet was threadbare, and the wall covering was faded and had begun to peel at the corners, but the foyer and staircase were clean. An air freshener had been plugged into a baseboard outlet and spewed lemony freshness that mingled with the natural mustiness of the house. We ran through the names on the mailboxes and found Carl Rosen, apartment 2B. We both knew chances weren't good that he'd be in, but we took the stairs and knocked on his door. No answer. We knocked on the door across the hall. No answer there either. We could get Carl Rosen's work address easy enough, but most people were reluctant to talk in their work environment. Better to wait a couple hours and catch him at home. Now what? I asked Ranger.
I want to go through Bart Cohn's house. It'll be easier to do alone, so I'm taking you back to the office. You should be safe there. I'll pick you up at 5, and we'll try Rosen again.
Chapter 8. Mrs. Apusenja was sitting in the office when Ranger dropped me off. She was on the couch, arms crossed over her chest, lips pressed tightly together. She jumped up when I walked in and pointed her finger at me.
You, Mrs. Apusenja said, what do you do all day? Do you look for Samuel Singh? Do you look for poor little Boo? Where are they? Why haven't you found them?
Connie rolled her eyes.
Huh,
Lula said from behind a file cabinet. I've only been looking for a couple days, I said.
This is the fourth day. Do you know what I think? I think you don't know what you are doing. I want someone new on the case. I demand someone new.
We all looked at the door to Vinny's inner office. It was closed and locked. There was silence behind the door. Connie got up and rapped on the door. No response.
Hey! Connie yelled. Mrs. Epicenter wants to talk to you. Open the door.
The door still didn't open. Connie returned to her desk, got a key from the middle drawer, and went back and opened Vinny's door.
Guess you didn't hear me,
Connie said, standing hand on hip, looking in at Vinny.
Mrs. Appusenja wants to talk to you.
Vinny came to the door and smiled an oily smile out at Mrs. Appusenja.
Nice to see you again, he said. Do you have some new information for us?
I have this for you. The new information is that I will go to the papers if you do not find Samuel Singh. I will ruin you. How does it look for my nonny? People will talk, and he owes me 2 weeks' rent. Who will pay that?
Of course we'll find him, Vinny said. I've got my best man looking for Singh, and Stephanie's helping him.
You are a boil on the backside of your profession,
Mrs. Appusenja said, and she left.
How many years have I been in this business? A lot of years, right?
Vinny asked.
And I'm good at it. I'm good at writing bonds. I do a service for the community. Does the honest, law-abiding taxpayer have to pay my salary? No. Does the city of Trenton have to hire cops to go find their scofflaws? No. All because of me. I go get the scumbags at no cost to the general population. I risk my neck.
Connie and Lula and I raised our eyebrows.
Well, okay, I risk Stephanie's neck, Vinny said. But it's all in the family, right?
Yeesh, Lula said.
I should have let Sebring write the damn visa bond, Vinny said. What was I thinking?
Les Sebring was Vinny's competitor. There were several bail bonds offices in the Trenton area, but Sebring's agency was the largest.
So what are you doing standing here?
Vinny asked, flapping his arms.
Go find him, for Christ's sake!
Vinny looked around and sniffed the air.
What's that smell? It smells like roast leg of lamb.
It was my afternoon snack, Lula said. I got it delivered from the Greek deli. I'm on the all-you-can-eat meat diet. I didn't eat the whole leg, though. I don't want to go overboard.
Yeah, Connie said. She only ate half a leg.
Vinny stepped back into his office and closed and locked the door.
Sounds like we should go find this guy, Lula said.
I'd like nothing better than to find Samuel Singh, but I didn't know how. And worse, I was having a hard time focusing on the hunt. I couldn't get Lillian Parisi out of my head. I kept seeing her marching into the bluebird, angrily clutching the flowers. Red rose, white carnation. The note was innocuous, nothing to get angry over, so the flowers had to be part of a continuing harassment. And surely she talked to someone about it. I was hoping Carl Rosen was that someone.
Earth to Stephanie, Lula said. You got any ideas?
No.
Me either,
Lula said.
I think this diet's clogging things up inside me. This isn't a creative thinker's diet. You need cheese doodles to do that shit. And birthday cake. The kind with the lard icing and the big pink and yellow icing roses.
Connie and I looked at Lula.
Not that I'm going to eat anything like that ever again, Lula said. I was just saying that's why I haven't got any good ideas.
Since we were all out of how to find Singh ideas, I asked Lula if she'd give me a ride so I could move my car to Joe's house.
Hell yeah, Lula said. I could use some air. It's too nice to be inside on a day like today. And besides, it smells like leg of lamb in here. This office needs some ventilation.
We were half a block down Hamilton when Lula looked in her rearview mirror.
I think we're being followed. That black SUV pulled out right after us, and now he's sitting on our bumper.
It's Tank. Ranger thinks I need a babysitter. Lula took another look.
He's fine. He's not as hot as Ranger, but he's fine all the same. I wouldn't mind having my way with him.
I thought you had a new boyfriend.
Don't mean I can't think someone else is fine. I'm just going steady, girl. I'm not dead.
In a couple minutes, we were at my apartment building, and Lula parked in the lot beside the escape.
I think you should go up to your apartment just to check it out and shit, Lula said. I could go with you, and I bet King Kong over there will go too, and I get a chance to see him up close.
Sure, I said. I should probably see if everything's okay anyway. We got out of our cars and walked to the back door. Tank is about 6'6" and is built like a tank. He hasn't an ounce of fat on him. He wears his hair in a marine buzz cut. He was dressed in desert camis. We climbed the stairs and walked down the hall. Tank took the key from me and opened the door. He was the first to step through. He looked around and he motioned us in. It was cool and quiet inside. No flowers. No photos. No killers. I gathered together some clean shirts and underwear, and we left. I'd forgotten about Tank following me, I said to Lula. He can chauffeur me around if you want to get back to the office.
What, are you crazy? If I go back there, I'll have to file. And Vinny's there. Vinny creeps me out these days. All he does is mope around worrying about Samuel Singh. It's unnatural. Vinny's usually out having a nooner with a goat. I hate having him just hang around the office.
Tank smiled at the part about the nooner, but he didn't say anything. He got into his shiny black SUV. Lula got into her red Firebird, and I got into my yellow Escape, and we all motored off to Joe's house. Lula parked behind me and immediately got out of her car.
Are you going in? She asked. I hope you're going in because I've never been in Morelli's house. I'm dying to see the inside. What's the decor? Modern? Traditional? Colonial?
Mostly Pizza Hut with a splash of Aunt Rose. I opened the door, and Bob rushed out at us, nose twitching, eyes wild. He looked from Tank to Lula to me, and then his head swung back to Lula, and he gave a loud woof.
What the?
Lula said. Bob gave another woof, chomped down on Lula's purse, ripped it out of her hand, and took off out the door down the street.
Hey, Lula yelled. Come back with that. That's my purse.
She looked to Tank.
Do something. I paid good money for that purse.
Tank whistled, but Bob paid no attention. Bob was at the end of the block, tearing the purse to shreds. We jogged down to Bob and found him gnawing on a pork chop.
That was my snack, Lula said. It was barbecue. I was looking forward to that pork chop.
I took Bob by the collar and dragged him back to Morelli's house.
I'm on a diet, Lula explained to Tank. The fat just melts away on this diet, but you gotta eat a lot of pork chops.
I locked Bob in the house, and Lula and I drove back to the office with Tank following.
That was sort of embarrassing, Lula said. It's hard to explain a pork chop in your purse.
Sorry it all got destroyed.
Yeah, I really wanted that pork chop. I don't care so much about the bag. I bought the bag from Ray Smiley out of the back of his Pontiac. It was one of those things that accidentally fell off a truck.
Lula's eyes got bigger.
Hey, we should make a stopover at the mall. I could get a new purse, and then just for the hell of it, we could go into Victoria's Secret and see if Tank follows us in. That's how you tell what a man's really made of. It's one thing for a man to be big and brave and kill a spider. Any man could do that. Trailing after a woman when she's shopping for thongs and push-up bras is a whole other category of man. And then if you want to see how far you can go with it, you ask him to carry one of those little pink bags they give you.
I've never been shopping with Ranger, so I can't say how he'd do with the Victoria's Secret test. Morelli flunked, hands down. Morelli takes off for soft-serve ice cream when I head for Victoria's Secret. No time, I told Lula. Ranger's picking me up at 5 o'clock. And Ranger doesn't like to be kept waiting. Precisely 5, I saw Ranger's truck ease to a stop in front of the bonds office. I grabbed my bag and my jacket, and I went out to meet him. The instant I got in beside Ranger, I saw Tank peel away and take off. I thought he was supposed to be guarding my body, I said to Ranger. Ranger looked at me with dark eyes.
It's my turn to guard your body, babe. Oh, boy.
Ever since I could remember, I've loved adventure stories and heroes. I guess that's true for all kids, and maybe all adults, too. My best friend Mary Lou Molnar and I would choose up roles when we were kids. I'd be Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe, or Inspector Gadget, or Han Solo. I'd run through the neighbor's yard, shouting, "Thundercats, ho!" And Mary Lou would follow after me, living her own fantasy as Smurfette, or Wendy Darling, or Marcia Brady. Mary Lou always had a good sense of gender and of her own abilities. Mary Lou's fantasies were close to the reality of her life. I, on the other hand, have never been able to merge the reality with the fantasy. In my mind, I'm still Snake Eyes. In truth, I'm closer to Lucy Ricardo. I don't have a lot of the skills I should have as a crime fighter. I'm not good with guns, and I've never found the time to take self-defense. The only black belt in my closet is a narrow snakeskin with a gold buckle. "Tell me about Bart Cohn," I said to Ranger. "Was his house filled with florist bills, photos of murdered women, body parts in the freezer?"
"None of the above. He has the minimum furniture. A bed, a chair, a table, a desk. No computer on the desk. No television. He had two books at bedside, Into Thin Air and a Nuts and Bolts catalog. It didn't look to me like he'd cracked a spine on Into Thin Air."
"Sounds like his wife had a good divorce lawyer."
"Cohn had minimum food in the refrigerator. His medicine chest was filled with antidepressants and sleeping pills."
"Do you think he's crazy?"
"I think he has no life. I think he's the job."
"Like us." Ranger looked over at me.
"You have a life. You shop for shoes. You eat butterscotch crimpets. You have a hamster, half ownership of a dog, 30% of a cop. And you have a scary family."
"You think I only have 30% of Morelli?"
"I think you have as much as he can give anyone right now."
"How about you?" I asked. "How much can you give?" Ranger kept his eyes on the road.
"You ask a lot of questions."
"So I've been told." It was close to 5:30 when we reached the apartment house on Market. Ranger pulled into the driveway and parked in a small lot to the rear of the house. We took the back entrance and went directly to the second floor. We knocked on Carl Rosen's door. No one answered. Ranger crossed the hall and knocked on 2A. A woman in her 50s opened the door and peered out.
"We're looking for Carl Rosen," Ranger said. "I don't suppose you've seen him."
"No," the woman said. "I haven't seen him, but he's usually home by now. Sorry."
The woman slipped back into her apartment. Her door closed, and three locks tumbled into place. Ranger paced away from the door, called Tank, and asked him to run a basic information check on Rosen. 3 minutes later, the information came back. Carl Rosen worked at the hospital. He drove a 94 blue Honda Civic. He was unmarried. Tank also had previous addresses and jobs and a list of relatives. Ranger disconnected and knocked one more time on Rosen's door. When no one answered, Ranger slid a slim tool into the lock and opened the door. He left me outside to do lookout, and he disappeared into the apartment. 10 minutes later, Ranger walked out of the apartment and locked the door behind him.
"I can't remember the last time I broke into so many places and found so little," Ranger said. "Not even a computer. Just the power cord plugged into the wall. Either Rosen takes his laptop with him to work, or else someone's gone through his apartment in front of us."
"Now what?"
"Now, we wait."
I called Morelli and told him I'd be late. I was thinking an hour, maybe, but we were still waiting at 9 o'clock. We were sitting on the floor outside Rosen's apartment, backs to the wall, legs outstretched. "My ass is asleep," I said to Ranger.
"And you'd like me to do something about it?" Ranger asked.
"Just making conversation."
"There are a lot of reasons why Rosen might not be home yet, but I have a bad feeling in my gut that this isn't going to turn out good," Ranger said.
"How much longer do you want to sit here?"
"Let's give him until 10.
"Okay," Morelli said. "Tell me again. You were doing what with Ranger?"
"We wanted to talk to Carl Rosen, but he never came home." I told Morelli about the waitress at the Bluebird and how she remembered about the flowers.
"Christ," Morelli said. That never came out in any of the investigation. I've read through the file. Carl Rosen was questioned, along with everyone else in that apartment building, but no one ever said anything about flowers.
I guess they didn't think it related.
Tomorrow morning I'll talk to Ollie. He was the principal on the case.
Oh, great. Blubberbutt Ollie, the bane of my existence. The guy who once tried to arrest me for impersonating a bounty hunter. It was late, and I was tired. I'd done nothing for hours, and it had sapped my energy. Spending time with Ranger was an odd experience. I was always aware of the sexual pull, magnified by the silence that surrounded him. The attraction had changed since we'd had the one night together. We knew the power of it now. We set boundaries after that night. His were different from mine. My boundaries were physical, and Ranger's were emotional. I still knew almost nothing about him, and I suspected it would always be that way. I had one task left before going to bed. I needed to check my email. Not a pleasant experience anymore. I knew there'd be a message from the killer. I had a terrible feeling of dread that it would be about Carl Rosen. I tapped my code into AOL and waited for my mail to appear. A chill slid along my spine when I saw the subject line, Tally Ho. "Dear Prey," the email began, "so sorry you couldn't get to talk to Carl, but that might have ruined the hunt. Alas, it's necessary to eliminate participants. After all, this is a survival game, isn't it?" Morelli was reading over my shoulder.
"Doesn't sound good for Carl."
"This guy thinks he's playing a game."
"Have you run across any paranoid schizophrenics lately? Any completely wacko nutcases?"
"My path is littered with them. Have you guys had any luck tracking the emails?"
"No. Hiding the origin of an email requires some sophistication, but it's possible. The Mercer County Prosecutor's Office is working with us. We'll see what we can do with this new one. I'm going to confiscate your computer for a while."
"Were you able to locate the flower source?"
"They didn't come from any of the local florists. This guy probably picked them up at a supermarket. We have notices up in all the supermarket lunchrooms for checkers to watch for red roses and white carnations going out. We've dusted your apartment for prints, but nothing worthwhile came up."
"This is very creepy."
"Yeah," Morelli said. "Let's go to bed, and I'll take your mind off your problems."
I woke up the next morning thinking maybe I only had 30% of Morelli, but it was a damn good 30%. My schedule for fighting crime began considerably later in the day than Morelli's, so by the time I wandered into the kitchen, Morelli was already at work. I got coffee brewing and dropped a frozen waffle into the toaster. The morning paper was on the table. I did a fast scan, but saw nothing about a body found floating in the Delaware. I took a mug of coffee and padded out to the living room, opened the door, and looked up and down the street for Tank. No Tank in sight. That didn't mean he wasn't there. I called Ranger and told him about the latest email. "I don't suppose you've seen Carl Rosen this morning?" I asked.
"No, his car hasn't surfaced, and he didn't show up for work."
"Is Tank out there? I didn't see him."
"He saw you. He said you were frightening."
"I haven't taken a shower yet. My hair might be a little unruly."
"Takes a lot to scare Tank," Ranger said. And he was gone.
I took a shower and I did the full-on hair thing. Hot rollers, gel, the works. I tweezed my eyebrows, painted my toenails, and spent an hour applying makeup. I shrugged into a swirly flowered skirt and finished it all off with a stretchy little white knit top. I was Jersey girl right down to the strappy sandals with the 4-inch heels. Not only did I have to do some image correction for Tank, but I'd be damned if I was going to die needing a pedicure. I clacked out of the house carrying my big leather shoulder bag and took off for the office in the Escape. I looked great, but I couldn't run for a